Summarizing the Sandy Hook situation. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Great to be back with you. Again, we're in the studio, so no weird-sounding electronic noises and only far superior sound quality. So I'm happy with that. Not quite as much engineering magic to do with the show before we send it on up to WLRY for playing. If only I can remember to send the correct dates shows in so we don't get the same show 2 days in a row like we did earlier this week.
Well, now that Chuck has done his penance, what we want to do today to wrap up the week is to talk about some of the situations. We started talking about this yesterday around the Sandy Hook massacre where Adam Lanza, 20-year-old, opened fire and killed 28 people. Now, he killed at least one of those people before he got to the school, which was his mother, Nancy Lanza, who ended up dying with 4 bullet wounds to the head. But we talked about the fact that the media and the liberals are saying it's all the fault of those evil guns. How dare they jump into the hands of this poor troubled young man and pull their own triggers and kill people. We got to ban the guns because once we get rid of the guns, we won't have any more of these problems. Well, au contraire, mon frere, because what we really have a situation is most of the state of Connecticut, and especially the city of Newtown, they'd already done that.
That's right.
They have one of the most restrictive sets of gun laws of any state in the country. The school, Sandy Hook, was a gun-free zone, or what we call a victim gathering place, so that all of these so-called brave heroes who are taking care of business, like Adam Lanza probably thought he was doing in his delusional, psychotic state, have ready access to victims without that messy complication of somebody shooting back at them. We also talked about the fact that Lanza was under counseling and psychological watch. He had been taking antidepressants, antipsychotics, many of which, some of their side effects, actually cause the psychosis they're supposed to cure. And we posted all that online. You can go to our website at principlepolicy.com and see all that. But today, we want to talk a little bit more about the whole idea of if we just get rid of those nasty guns.
Yeah, here's something very interesting, Barry, from an article in redstate.com.
Okay.
This is a quote. Mm-hmm. This is what the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence has to say about Connecticut's gun control regime. Now, listen to how positive this is.
Okay, sure.
Connecticut has strong gun laws that help combat the illegal gun market, prevent the sale of most guns without background checks, and reduce risks to children, according to the Brady Campaign. In the organization's 2009 state scorecards released for all 50 states, Connecticut earned 53 points out of a total 100 and has the nation's 4th strongest gun laws.
Okay.
Connecticut has done more than most states to combat illegal guns and has worked to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people. In fact, Connecticut has a one-of-a-kind gun law that allows a judge to remove guns from people who have been determined to be a threat to themselves or others, said Ron Pinciero, president of Connecticut Against Gun Violence. Well, how many mistakes can you spot in that story?
Oh, can we go on and on with this? The illegal gun market? Well, what it really does is it restricts legitimate gun owners from being
That's
able
right.
to get a gun. Now, Nancy Lanza actually had to go through all that paperwork in order to get the firearms that she possessed legally.
That's right.
Mind you. Now, if they think that you're going to reduce these risks by basically making it more difficult. Now, granted, Chuck, if it's an illegal firearm, now what makes it illegal? That the state says you can't have it in our state, or that it's used in a crime?
Yeah, we're getting into a very gray area. Illegal firearm. Well, the Constitution's pretty clear. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Right.
And at least from the federal perspective.
Absolutely.
And as we talked earlier in the week, okay, do states have the right to regulate gun ownership?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
And the fact is that would I move to Connecticut?
No, you probably would not.
And one of the reasons I would not is because Connecticut would not allow me to defend myself. I should not have to fill out reams of paperwork, go through an interview with someone who's probably far more dysfunctional than I am, although maybe not, come to think of it. Maybe that may not be possible. But you understand what I'm saying. This guy who's interviewing me to allow me to buy a gun, what do I know about him? The answer is nothing. If he's a member of the police force, chances are he's got a much higher chance of being an alcoholic. He's got a much higher chance of being a wife abuser. He's got a much higher chance of being some other sort of substance abuser or have aggression issues.
Uh-huh.
Because he's a police officer. We know these things for a fact. They're statistical. I'm sorry, officers, if you're out there, don't get mad at me. All I'm doing is repeating the facts.
Well, the point is that those are high-stress professions, and it's understandable that after a while of that much stress, you tend to end up internalizing things.
But we're not
bashing on police or law enforcement
right.
in any way, shape, or form.
That's
but what we're saying is, the whole point is, Chuck, if this is the fourth strongest gun control law state in the country and 28 people are dead because somebody opened fire, is the proper response to say, well, we just need stronger gun laws? Or is it that we need to take a moment and stop, back up a minute, look at this as a case-by-case basis and not as a overall umbrella of the entire world has to give up their firearms so that we can live in peace? Let's take a look. What were some of the influences that drove 20-year-old Adam Lanza to do this heinous act? Well, I believe first and foremost, Charles, I've not seen any mention anywhere of church affiliation.
Nope.
In any way, shape, or form. Now, there may be one, but it may be a tenuous affiliation that, well, they attended this church and that meant that they showed up on Christmas and on Easter, maybe. So there's no faith background mentioned. There's no moral centering or education mentioned. What we do have mentioned is psychotropic drugs.
Yep.
We do have mentioned violent video games that he was completely immersed in. We have mentioned that he comes from a broken family because his mother and father divorced. And we know that there are many children whose parents divorce and they don't pick up guns and start shooting
people.
And
sometimes they get divorced because of the stress of having a mentally ill
child too. Yeah. And we understand that as well. But those are some of the issues. That he would isolate himself, staying in his room all the time. His mother had finally gotten to the point. Now, he's 20 years old and he's still living at home, Charles. That his mother had finally gotten to the point that she had started the paperwork with the courts to basically have him committed to a psychiatric institution because all the things that she was trying to do, and I believe his father as well, who was involved in this in some respects, were trying to do to get help for him were unsuccessful.
Yes.
Now, the big question is, what does any of that have to do with a gun? None of it has anything to do with guns. It has to do with your moral foundation, your character, possibly even some situations with your biological makeup. Maybe he has some certain issues.
Biochemical issues
that were not helped by long-term usage of antipsychotic medicines.
And speaking as a biochemist, I can tell you that there's always a question about whether biochemistry causes certain thought patterns or whether certain thought patterns can cause biochemistry. And the answer is very complex insofar as certain things can change your brain biochemistry, certain external behaviors, immersing yourself in certain kinds of things.
Well, it is actually a known fact that violent video game imagery can have the same impact as drugs and pornography do on the brain. The prolonged exposure to any of those can help your brain reform neural synapse connections.
Oh, sure.
That, in other words, your brain can rewire itself, and it can be in a very negative way.
Think about it in these terms. If you pick up a clarinet and decide to learn how to play the clarinet, your brain rewires itself.
Right, and you get finger memory.
As you go along, you actually develop new synapse connections to deal with the new information that you are being required to kick back out.
Right, exactly.
It's sort of like any kind of calculating device, any kind of controlling device. A smart device learns, and it builds new connections.
It's called memorization by repetition.
Exactly. And the fact is that you can change both brain structure and biochemistry by what you choose to do. Now, that being said, that's one of the factors. There are so many factors involved, and virtually none of them have to do. The gun was the tool. What if he had gone out to the garage and got a great big can of propane and gone out to blow up the school?
Which he very well could have done.
If you remember, Klebold and the other name escapes me at Columbine, That was one of the plans. They were going to blow up the school with propane tanks. So these guys come up with these scenarios. It's rare that they work in pairs like those two did. But in this case, here we've got a young man who got some kind of a trigger. We don't know what the trigger is. It may have been the fear of commitment to a mental institution. We don't know. Sometimes it's a breakup with a girlfriend. Sometimes it's best friend abandons you. Sometimes your mom and dad get divorced. Sometimes your girlfriend leaves you. But they're unstable. They go into that instability, and whammo, they're over the edge. It's up to parents. I had someone accuse me today of talking about these violent video games. Oh, you want to ban video games? I'm like, no, I don't. I want personal responsibility taken regarding their use and even possibly their manufacture, but I do not want to ban them.
Well, I'm going to take one step further, Chuck. I do want to ban some of them because there are some that have absolutely no use whatsoever in a decent society. When you have games that are keyed to getting people to engage in prostitution, buy, sell, and take illicit drugs, shoot people at random with
steel cars,
steal property, and that is how you win the game. What you're dealing with is an antisocial simulator that's going to have problems. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know which ones I'm talking about, the main one I'm talking about is one called Grand Theft Auto.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of other ones. You see, the point is, we do have to balance liberty with personal responsibility.
Yes.
But there comes a point in time where even at that edge of personal responsibility, there are things that even adults shouldn't be practicing, much less our youth.
Oh, sure.
And these type of escapist entertainment options, as they're called, are not something that, as a culture, we should condone. I'm sorry, I don't care if it's a 15-year-old kid or a 45-year-old man, if he's sitting around all the time playing Grand Theft Auto, figuring out how to score with hookers and sell drugs and shoot people cold blood on the street as part of his entertainment, we've got ourselves a significant moral problem.
Let me tell you, I'm a Civilization player from way back.
Oh, yeah.
I love Civilization. However, just to give you a quick scenario, I can remember once I was way ahead in the game and I had developed nuclear weapons first. You know, everybody else was still using catapults and, you know, that kind of knights and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I've got nuclear weapons. Well, the first time I dropped one, I got a pang of guilt. And I'm like, it's a game, stupid. But I still had that trepidation about dropping a nuclear bomb on a city. Nobody lived there. It was virtual, and I was fully aware of that. Nonetheless, nowadays, I'm sort of like, drop it. Get them. No, but that does change. You know what I'm saying? I no longer feel that guilt when I play the game.
That's because you've been desensitized.
I've been
desensitized.
But that's my point.
Okay, but let's then extend that particular scenario over to a young junior United States military enlisted or junior officer who's flying an unmanned drone and says, is that a kid we just killed? That's where we get to.
That's the problem.
That's where we're getting into big problems.
We're getting into problems now because you're right. We're training people to kill by remote control. The battlefields always basically used to be you could see your enemy.
Exactly.
You looked him in the eye, you knew you killed a man.
Well, and the point is, if you took a look at after battles in the Civil War, there were reports of when they picked up the front, there were 6, 7, 8 rounds that had been jammed down in the barrel because men didn't want to kill their brothers.
They were
acting like they were firing and then stopping and reloading and acting like they were firing and keeping and just doing that as they went across the field.
Until the barrel was full,
that's right.
Well, I just watched a special on the Battle of Britain in which they used interviews and had actors act out these interviews. And basically what the people said, the British pilots would say was things like, at that distance, we could see the guys in the cockpit, and when we shot them, we could see the bullets tear into them and realize that was a human being.
It was a human being.
And suddenly, it became not killing the enemy, but you just killed a fellow human being. We need that kind of thinking, and we're getting so far away from it, training people through the use, and we're almost out of time, but training people through the use of these games and things like that. They're becoming very desensitized to the fact that there's a human being on the other side of that weapon. Real quick, before we sign off, my daughters, we were watching, they were little, and there was a film on the news from an infrared film from a helicopter who was firing a 20-millimeter cannon, and they were getting, quote-unquote, getting these terrorists. And the guy crawled underneath the truck, and you could see the figures being hit by these 20-millimeter shells.
Right.
My oldest daughter said, that was cool. And I go, honey, that was not cool. That was a human being being killed.
Yeah.
Remember that. It looks like a game, but it's not. That was a real person being killed, whether they were the enemy or not. That being said, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.